Omaha Public Radio presents another luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club on Noon Forum. On today's program, we'll hear a debate on the topic Education in Nebraska, School Choice, and the Charter School Debate. The guest speakers will be Katie Linehan, Executive Director of Educate Nebraska, an organization which promotes private school choice to low-income families and opening the door to high-performing public charter schools. And Ann Hunter-Pertle, Executive Director of Stand for Schools, a Nebraska-based organization which advocates the ongoing tradition of public education. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, July 20, 2017, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of the Omaha Press Club, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program is Gary Willis, a member of the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee.
We're excited to welcome two guests today, each advocating for a different vision on how to best serve students in our communities. Katie Linehan leads Education Nebraska, supporting more access to private and charter schools for Nebraska families. Katie was born and raised in Omaha and spent more than a decade working with underserved youth, primarily in North and South Omaha. Most recently, Katie was a middle school teacher at Success Academy Charter School in Harlem in New York City. Other classroom experiences include teaching English in South Korea and as a kindergarten lead at Girls Inc. in Omaha. Ann Hunter-Pertle leads Stand for Schools, promoting public schools in our state. Ann grew up in Lincoln, and graduating from Lincoln Public Schools and the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. Prior to founding Stand for Schools, Ann spent 5 years in Washington, D.C., working at the U.S. Senate, the White House, and the Environmental Protection Agency. By the flip of a coin, Katie will speak first.
So I'm going to put my water here and hopefully not spill it. Hi again, or rather, as he said, my name's Katie, and I am the Executive Director of Educate Nebraska. And before I get to my prepared remarks, I just want to thank the Omaha Press Club for hosting this event, and thank Anne for agreeing to participate, and thank everyone here for coming today to listen and hopefully learn a little bit more about this topic. As I'm going to go into, I think it's one of the most important issues, really, of our time in Nebraska and in America. So, as a school choice supporter, I believe every child in every zip code deserves a high-quality education. Today, I'm going to tell you how I came to this conclusion and why I work alongside millions of parents and educators who believe the same thing. When I was 16 years old, a close family friend introduced me to four little boys whom I got to know much better, beginning with tutoring after school, and we would go roller skating together and to movies and back to school shopping. And the boys lived just northeast of 30th and Cumming, so pretty close to here, in North Omaha. And at the time, I was attending Duchenne Academy, which also most probably here know is a private school in Omaha, and it's just southwest of that same intersection. And as I got to know the boys better, a few things really stood out to me. First and foremost, their potential. These kids were just as capable, or more capable, of any kids I have ever met and have met since. Second, I began to notice that the public schools that they were zoned to were much different than the public schools I'd attended, even though we lived in the same city. And finally, and this really didn't occur to me until much more recently, is that my parents' ability to leave Millard Public Schools for Westside Public Schools, specifically because of a certain program Westside offered that Millard didn't, was made possible by their ability to pay a mortgage, and later, their ability to pay tuition so I could go to private high school. So that's important to note because school choice isn't a new phenomenon in America. My parents were able to exercise it again by choosing a zip code and by paying tuition. But for thousands of children in Nebraska, that is not a choice. So I'm not going to stand here before everyone that took the time to come today, and I certainly would not stand in front of a room full of parents who cannot afford a better option for their child and tell them my siblings and I should have benefited from school choice, but their children should not. So let's talk about what charter schools are and what charter schools aren't. Charter schools are free public schools, and that's obvious, often misconstrued, and it was a little bit on the flyers I noticed, charter schools versus public schools. All charter schools are public schools. They're free. They're open to all students. They can't charge tuition. They're free. Every child who wants to go to a charter school has an equal opportunity, which is only limited by the space in that school. Charter schools have a little more autonomy than traditional district schools, but they also have more accountability. So what does that mean? By autonomy, charter schools can operate a little differently than the district schools. And one of the things that stands out the most is charter schools typically are not governed at all by teacher union contracts, whereas most district schools do operate under union contracts. So what does this mean? It means a charter school can recruit, reward, and retain teachers based on effectiveness rather than things like seniority. It also means that charter schools can offer kids longer school days and longer school years if that best fits the needs of the kids and their families. What does it mean to have more accountability? If a charter school is not working, it can and it should close. The same cannot be said for all traditional schools, many of which continue to operate even if they've been failing for decades. So, take Omaha. 2 out of 3 public schools east of 72nd Street in Omaha have math and reading proficiency rates of less than 25%. Most of these schools have been persistently failing for years, yet they remain open, and for many children, they are the only option. Under a good public charter school law, this does not happen. The vast majority of public charter schools in America are nonprofit entities, and every single charter school law that has been proposed in Nebraska to date requires that the school would be a nonprofit school. So, do some charter schools fail? Yes. Are some charter schools mismanaged? Yes. But in every instance where a charter school falters, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of examples of a traditional district school failing or fraud in the system. And just last year, most in this room probably remember when students were stranded in the street instead of learning in classrooms because of district mismanagement. More recently, Superintendent Finas III in OPS voluntarily withdrew from consideration because, as one finalist put it, the school district does not have the best interest of kids in their actions. As a way to explain away charter school success, which I'm going to get to, some claim they are selective, creaming the so-called best students from the rest. And I hate that term because I don't think we should be saying which kids are best and which are not. But what I want to tell you today is it's a myth, and it's been debunked time and again. So I worked at Success Academy, as was mentioned, in New York City. And Success Academy started as one charter school in 2006 in Harlem. Today, it is a network of charter schools that serves more than 17,000 students in 41 schools throughout the city. And these schools exist in the poorest areas of New York. 77% of children attending Success Academy are from low-income families. 95% are children of color. 15% qualify for special education. In the most recent school year, Success Academy students performed in the top 0.3% on math assessments that every kid in the state has to take, and in the top 1.5% on reading assessments. This means that poor kids in Harlem, which is where I taught, poor kids in the Bronx, and poor children in Queens are outperforming their wealthy peers on the Upper East Side, in the wealthiest suburbs of New York City, and in the most affluent areas of the entire state. Tragically, and this really is a tragedy, and it's hard to grapple for if you like charter schools or if you don't. For every 7 kids who want to go to a Success Academy school, there's only 1 spot. In the Bronx, that ratio is 15 to 1. This has nothing to do with the school's desire to expand to serve more children and everything to do with political agendas and unnecessary roadblocks. The most profound obstacle to quality growth of successful charter schools throughout this country, including in Nebraska, are the special interests that prioritize adults before children and the lack of political will to confront those interests. The teachers' union is amongst the most powerful political force in our state, and many elected officials rely on that force to get elected. While such support is often more prevalent for Democrats, and I'll admit I'm not a Republican, but that's just how it is nationwide and in Nebraska, many in the Democratic Party have broken with the union on this issue, chief amongst them President Barack Obama and Senator Cory Booker, both outspoken, unapologetic charter school supporters. In addition to the union, there are some individuals who feel compelled to defend the status quo, clinging to their own views of what the traditional public school system symbolizes, what it could be, and what it should be. And in a perfect world, every school would work for every child. But this is simply not the case. And this viewpoint and source of motivation, like the ability to choose a school based on moving to a different zip code or paying private school tuition, is a luxury afforded to some and not others, based largely on wealth and privilege, or the lack thereof. There is a man I respect greatly, and he came to Nebraska this spring to advocate for children and families. His name's Kevin Chavis, and he was a city councilman out in D.C. and really fought for kids while he was out there and is involved in the school choice effort still. And he often says, and I believe this to be true, the only people who are against school choice are those who have it. I attended public schools in Omaha up until high school, and my niece and nephews do today. While it's true that charter schools are expanding throughout the country, most children do and will continue to attend traditional district schools. If charter schools harm children attending these schools, I would not be advocating for them. And the thousands of educators working in charter schools today who get up every single day to ensure that every child, regardless of race, regardless of income, has access to a high-quality education, would not be advocating for them either. Claims that charter schools hurt children are a scare tactic used by those whose primary goal is not to empower families or expand opportunities for all, but to defend the status quo. In cities like Washington, D.C., district charter collaboration has led to improved outcomes and opportunities for children across the spectrum. So children in charter schools, children in private schools, and children in traditional district schools. When adults put children first, extraordinary things can and do happen. A measure of a school that is working, and I was fortunate enough to work in one of these schools, is one where the kids arrive early and stay late, not because they have to, but because they want to. It's a school where teachers call home not only because a student might be late, but also because that student aced their spelling test, or because they did something kind for a classmate with whom they once sparred. It's a school where fourth graders salivate over the next novel on the reading list because they've developed such a strong passion for reading, the places it can take them, and the characters they relate to. These are the schools that families will choose because they are the schools where children will learn. Tell a parent about such schools, and in my experience, that parent will care less about the school's label, charter, district, or private, and more about whether or not it's an option for her child. I've lived in New Orleans, in D.C., and New York City, and these three cities are doing school choice better than many in the country, and people look to them as an example of what works. So, when I came back to Omaha in 2011, I had this idea that Omaha needed charter schools. But if you'd asked me then whether I supported school vouchers or private school choice, I cringe to think I would have said no. So I want you to think about that with me for a minute. Here I am, a child whose family moved from one suburban Omaha school to another, again, for a specific program that my siblings needed, and someone who attended a private high school. And by this point, I knew not only that a lot of kids are stuck in failing schools, but I actually knew some of these kids and families. I had witnessed up close the devastation aligned with the absence of a high-quality education. And yet, knowing all of these things and living as I had, I was going to tell parents of lesser means that they should have fewer choices rather than more, or more accurately, that they should have another choice, but it should be limited by my beliefs about what's best for a system rather than their beliefs about what's best for their child. I've never met a parent who says, I wish I didn't have that choice for my son, or that says, maybe if I just had fewer choices, I would have found a school that works best for my daughter. That's why choice programs continue to grow across the country despite the political hurdles and entrenched special interests fighting them every step of the way. So I had this idea once that once people understand that this is working for kids and how certain policies result in wins for families, we can move faster, we can open more high-quality schools, we can close or transform those that aren't working, we can ensure every child has access to an effective educator and a love for learning. Unfortunately, that hasn't proven true yet. The opponent's arguments simply shift. It used to be charter schools don't work. Then it was charter schools don't do any better than the district schools. Then it was they do better, but for reasons or supposed reasons we don't agree with. Then it was not every charter school is right for every child, which, ironically, is the argument school choice proponents have been making all along. Most recently, the messaging in Nebraska has been this: we don't need more choices for poor families because the choices available to middle and upper income families are pretty good. And this entire time, while the charter school movement is growing and improving and increasingly in higher demand, we're talking around the real issue, which is how much we value adult interest at the expense of what's best for kids. And I'm going to admit something to you. I am an adult. I have interest. But they shouldn't trump a child's interest when it comes to a system that exists exclusively, in theory, for the benefit of children and the future prosperity of this country. And so with that, in conclusion, I urge you to do the research on this issue. I don't have time to tell you all I would if I could and if you wouldn't get bored. And also, I hope you'll ask questions. Ask them of your elected officials. Ask them of your friends and neighbors. And when you ask those friends, consider whether they were able to choose the school through tuition or moving to the neighborhood that they live in. And I hope you really will do this, ask questions of a parent whose only option today is a school that is failing her child. Ask her whether every child in every zip code deserves a high-quality education. So I look forward to listening to what Anne has to say and then hopefully answering some questions. Thanks again for this opportunity.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Thank you very much to the Omaha Press Club, to Katie for participating today, and you all for attending. My name's Ann Hunter-Pertle. I'm the executive director and founder of Stand for Schools, and our mission is to advance public education in Nebraska. I'm here because I'm the product of a Nebraska public education from kindergarten all the way through my master's degree, actually first grade, check that, started kindergarten in Kansas. But that education allowed me to do what I wanted to do in the world, and I'm committed to making sure that every Nebraska child gets that same opportunity. Overall, Nebraska has excellent public schools, boasting the fifth highest high school graduation rate in the country at 88.9%, the highest ACT score among states where a majority of students take that exam, and the seventh highest college-going rate in the country, among other achievements. So I want to be very clear that on the whole, Nebraska's public schools are succeeding. They are the lifeblood of our communities, and we should be very proud of them and what they do. But that said, even a good system is not perfect, and there are schools in our state that need significant improvement. Those challenges are falling, as Katie pointed out, disproportionately on the shoulders of our most vulnerable students, which are low-income students, new immigrants, and racial minorities. And that is not acceptable. And so we're going to focus a lot of the discussion today on the relative handful of schools in our state, particularly in Omaha, that are struggling. And that's appropriate. We should focus our time and attention on the schools and students that need it most. But we shouldn't take this discussion to mean that our public schools are failing or that we can't fix the challenges we do face. The question before us today isn't, are charter schools good or bad? It's what strategies are proven to help us meet the educational challenges we face here in Nebraska. And what's proven, what works best over and over, is investing the time, energy, and resources into supporting what's working in our public schools while fixing what's not, as opposed to giving up and defunding them. So what charter schools are is they're schools that take public tax dollars but lose the transparency and oversight of an elected school board. And instead, they put those taxpayer dollars into the hands of a private board of directors, whether in a nonprofit or for-profit entity, which typically have far fewer transparency requirements than publicly elected school boards do. And as Katie pointed out, there's some debate as to whether charter schools are public schools or not. Last year, the National Labor Relations Board actually ruled that they are not public schools. In the case of a couple of labor disputes involving schools in, I believe it was Pennsylvania, the National Labor Relations Board ruled that charter schools are in fact government contractors, private contractors, as opposed to public schools. And the reason that matters is because of their structure and the fact that they're taking public dollars and putting them into private hands. School choice sounds great, but it comes with consequences. And that's something that its proponents don't always point out. The way that charter schools and vouchers are typically funded is that each student is assigned a dollar amount that is to follow them to any school of their parents' choosing, which means that dollar amount is being taken away from the public school that they would have attended and shifting to a private entity, whether a charter school management organization or a private school in the form of a voucher. The problem there is that the public school's costs stay just about the same. If you lose one student out of a class, you still need the same number of teachers. You still need the same size building. It's not as though an entire third grade class is likely to transfer out of a charter school, allowing one teacher to follow them or to leave the school. So, you know, we're not saving money through school choice, but we are costing our public schools something. And our public school students in many states that have charter schools and vouchers are getting left in the dust. In addition, I want to point out that charter schools do get to select their students, and that's a problem. I don't doubt for a minute that the charter school that Katie worked at in New York City was great. But charter schools typically require an application. And even with the best of intentions, that application is a bar that some families can't clear. If you've got a parent who's working three jobs to make ends meet, or someone who doesn't speak English when the application is only available in English, already you're leaving out a whole population of kids. And some charter schools don't have students' interests in mind. One particularly egregious example is Greenwood's Charter School outside of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I believe this was in 2014. At Greenwood's, the application to attend the charter school was not available online. It was not available even in person at the school. It was available one night a year at a private golf club, miles outside the Philadelphia suburbs, not accessible by public transportation. Not surprisingly, Greenwood's had the lowest percentage of students eligible for free and reduced lunch of any school in Philadelphia. Now, when that practice, which is illegal, by the way, was uncovered, the state could have closed that charter school, but they didn't. They got a little slap on the wrist, said, you need to reform your application process, make it more equitable and more accessible. But the school didn't close. That's one example, but there are thousands across the country to show that there is a range in not only in the results of charter schools, but in their intentions. The NAACP last October voted in favor of a national moratorium on charter schools, saying that they have not lived up to their promises and that they prey in particular on neighborhood schools and minority communities. Regardless of your thoughts on charter schools or vouchers, the fact is that more than 90% of children in this country still attend public schools. And so we have to find ways to make them work for all students. The good news is, in Nebraska and in Omaha, we're well on our way to doing just that. We've had 25 years where charter schools have existed in some other states where they've run the experiments for us. We can see what works and what doesn't when it comes to charter schools. And we can take what's best from charter schools and implement them in our public schools here in Nebraska. This isn't an experiment we need to run on the kids in the state, risking putting our public tax dollars in private hands and risking some of the less well-intentioned consequences that we've discussed so far. So a great example is Kennedy Elementary right here in Omaha. Kennedy is part of the 75 North Community Redevelopment Program. And what Kennedy did is really interesting. They've taken a model partly based on a charter school in Atlanta, including having a longer school day and a longer school year. They've worked with the local teachers union to negotiate a different contract for teachers in that building to work those longer hours because they're interested in serving kids in this way. We're able to take the best of charter schools and put it into our public schools. And with that in mind, there is no ceiling on what public schools in Nebraska can achieve. I also want to note that Omaha Public Schools has some really aggressive school improvement plans in place in some of the lowest income elementary schools in the city that are making huge gains. Druid Hill Elementary School was on what they call priority status in that the state intervened in that school along with OPS itself to improve test scores and improve the culture there. In fact, there was a World Herald article covering this just last week, so take a look at that. But this year, Druid Hill is being removed from state priority status. Their test scores are up, the culture within the building is improved, and it's now the model being followed across the state for how to do school improvement. We know how to do this. It's not rocket science. It's just hard work. And it is hard work. Let's be honest about that. But I also want to note that the graduation rate for African American students in OPS is now 80.8%, which is up 25.2% in the last 10 years. By the way, that's still not good enough. Our job isn't done until that graduation rate is 100% for every kid in the city. But that doesn't discount the incredible gains that have been made in just the last few years. We also need to take a look beyond schools to the bigger picture. Schools have a critical role to play in lifting students and families out of poverty. Of course they do. And we need to find ways to make them work better for every kid. But schools can't do it alone. So for instance, if students come to school hungry, they can't learn. And in a world where the U.S. House of Representatives is contemplating a budget that would cut billions of dollars from SNAP, formerly known as food stamps, and other nutrition assistance programs for low-income families, as well as other forms of social support, education advocates can't afford to sit on the sidelines. And that's why Stand for Schools today signed a letter from anti-poverty advocates in Nebraska to our congressional delegation, urging them to oppose these slash-and-burn cuts for the most vulnerable Nebraskans. And that's why, in addition to school and community nutrition programs, Stand for Schools supports research-backed policies like expanding early childhood education, career education, and high-quality before and after-school and summer programming to help our public schools better serve all students. Another word about equity. Nebraska is one of only seven states that actually provide more funding for poorer districts than their wealthier peers. And despite the fact that we spend the second least in the country, we rank 49th in terms of state funding to K-12 education, that funding is more equitably distributed among school districts than in any surrounding state. Again, it's not a perfect system, but we're on the right track and we know how to improve it. With the right support from state and local leaders, there is absolutely no limit to what our public schools can achieve. Thank you very much, and I look forward to the discussion.
First question we have is, public schools deal with multiple languages in their schools. How would a charter school handle the multiple language situation?
A charter school, and actually on this issue of spending, I have to say that we're 49th in the country is misleading. We spend 10th most when you adjust it on education in Nebraska, but why I lead with that is because most charter schools receive less funding than the traditional district schools. In New York, they only got 75% of what district schools got. And like I said about the Success Academy schools, they're performing much better than the district schools, and they have kids that speak multiple languages too. So it's about practices that are happening in the schools. And it doesn't matter if you call it a charter school, a traditional school, or a private school. There are practices that work best for kids, and what we advocate for is that's what the focus should be on. What works for kids, and how do we make that available to the most kids possible?
So what I would note, is this on?
Yeah.
Okay. What I would note is that there is a huge range among charter schools for the kinds of students they serve, and those are, you know, choices that they're able to cherry pick in terms of how they manage their school. And there are a lot of cases across the country in the application process, and this is illegal, but it still happens in a very widespread way, for charter organizations to discourage in one way or another certain kinds of students from applying to their school that they don't want to serve, frankly, because those students are more expensive. To Katie's point, in New York, where charter schools are reimbursed, 75% of the rate that the state spends per pupil on public school students, that creates an incentive to discourage the most expensive students to educate from applying or from staying in a charter school. Who are those students? They are special education students. They're kids with behavioral problems, with difficult family situations at home. They are exactly the vulnerable students that we all care about in this discussion here today. And so, there are a lot of tricks that some charter schools use, not all, but some charter schools use to discourage, for example, students who speak other languages from applying. You make your application available only in English, and, that can significantly impact the pool of students that you're looking to choose from in your lottery in staffing up your charter school. So, there are other charter schools that do focus on, dual language programs, but that's entirely up to the charter management organization, and there is no guarantee from a school district perspective that, charter schools are going to spring up in the ways that communities need them to fill the needs that exist.
Well, the best thing, one of the best things about charters is families can choose them. No one's forced to go to one. So if a family, and again, we believe that parents should be the ones to choose, think a school will teach their child better, then that's an option that's available to them. I want to talk about, because Anne mentioned Success Academy again, which I'm glad about. Like I said in my remarks, for every 15 kids that are applying in the Bronx, there's only one spot available. They cannot discriminate who gets that spot. It's a public, open, free lottery. Everyone whose name goes in has an equal chance of being pulled. And what we are seeing, because they have been around long enough, Success has and other charters, is we can track the progress of the child who was lotteried in and the child who was lotteried out. And we are talking about years of differences in learning in some cases between, depending on that choice that happened. And one of the best things about charters, too, is that if they aren't working, they close. And if they're doing things that are illegal, the state actually does authorize and regulate charter schools. So elected officials at the state level are in charge of that. But we have illegal things going on in Nebraska all the time. In schools, just FYI, OPS, if you're talking about higher graduation rates, OPS at times told kids to stay home because if you keep coming to school, you might keep failing your test and then we can't let you graduate. It's called grade freezing. And so you might have 88% of kids graduating now, but only 23% of kids that go to Metro Community College are prepared to succeed.
Okay, next question. This is to Ann. If only 3 of the 87 get the priority designation, how do we help the students in the other 8 schools who only get one slot at third grade?
I'm not sure I totally understand the question, but I think what that question is getting at is the needs improvement designation that the state puts on some schools that are challenged. So under AQUEST, which is the state school accountability system, schools are designated into different categories based on their performance, the lowest of which is needs improvement. I believe there are 87 schools in that category. 3 of them are eligible to receive targeted resources and help from the state. The reason it's only 3 is because that's all the funding the legislature appropriated to help. So that's a question for your state legislators, and I would urge you to ask it and forcefully.
Okay. This is all a new accountability system that's supposed to replace No Child Left Behind, because when No Child Left Behind passed in 2002, they said by 2015, all kids in public schools, regardless of race, regardless of income, are going to be proficient in math and reading. And that has not happened. And so we had this push by people, again, protecting the status quo, that those expectations should be lowered, and lowered specifically for low-income kids and kids of color. So the state created this new accountability system, and I believe it's a misnomer that it's called accountability, because what they want is more money to fix failing schools when we know more money is not going to solve the problem. Again, Nebraska spends, depending if you consider cost of living, in the top 15% of all schools in the country. And we have the biggest achievement gaps between black and white students in the country as well. In 2013, black eighth graders in Nebraska scored worse on the national assessment for math than did their peers, black students in eighth grade, in any other state in the country. I really hope that resonates and concerns people in this room. And so this idea that we have 87 failing schools, and I'm not afraid to say schools are failing. If I had a child, I would not choose a failing school, and that's how I believe I would see it. They do not need more money necessarily. That is not going to fix the problem. There's a school in Grand Island. It's called Wasmer Elementary. And a few years ago, I was talking to a reporter. I don't see him here. And I told him this is one of the highest poverty schools in the country, in the state. And it's performing better than every school in Westside. I think at that time, better than most schools in Millard, better than schools in Elkhorn, and throughout the state. And he asked, well, what's going on? And I said, wouldn't it be nice if someone asked that question? So he went out and he interviewed the principal, and it was on the front page of the paper. And unfortunately, she left. And what happened when she left is their scores went down, by the way, because people working in schools do matter. She said, when No Child Left Behind passed, I thought we had to be 100% proficient. And so we have no excuses for why kids can't learn. They can be poor. They can come from English language learning backgrounds. They can have special education designation. But they are going to be proficient in math and reading by 2015. And they were darn close to that 100% proficiency.
Okay. Next question. Nebraska has school choice for every public school student, if there is room. How does adding another choice improve on that unless you include private vouchers as well?
Yeah, and again, as I said in my speech, I'm now for all school choice because the bottom line is there aren't enough good choices for all kids. And until that day, I will fight, again, alongside parents and educators to make that possible. So I just want to be clear, charter schools are public schools, but I and my organization also support all forms of school choice for low-income families in particular. Some people will say, and when former Commissioner Breed was asked this a few years ago, he said, we don't need charter schools because they don't do any better than district schools, which if you remember, that was the second excuse before it's no longer in question that they do. And people in Nebraska can already choose to go to any school they want. So we looked into a little data, such as if you are zoned to Nathan Hale Middle School, and I don't think many parents would argue, especially those who are trying to get out, including my cousin, who has two kids, that it's failing. It was failing. I hope it's improving. If you're zoned there and you want to go to Alice Buffett, and I'll go back on my family right now because my cousin has two kids, and this is the case, there are no spots at Alice Buffett Middle School. There aren't any. And OPS will confirm that. And talking about the privilege that comes with supposedly you get some sort of, it comes down to privilege, that charter schools, again, they can or they cannot be selective in who gets in when they have open spots. No rule in Nebraska on that, on public schools. I can't tell you how many people have told me, yeah, there wasn't a spot at Alice Buffett Middle School. Or there wasn't a spot at Dundee Elementary School. But my friend, my aunt, works over at the TAC building, so I made a phone call. That's it's just not against the law yet in Nebraska.
So I do want to point out that this conversation is bigger than just Omaha, and I think that's something we need to keep in mind. So Nebraska does have open enrollment statewide. So any student can attend any school in the state that has space available. That's pretty amazing. As far as I'm aware, it's fairly unique in the country. And it is great. Now, Katie is right that there are schools in some districts that are full and are not able to accept additional students. I would make the case that that's exactly why we need to focus on strategies that improve all public schools. Again, let's imagine even for a minute that we had charter schools and vouchers in Nebraska, more than 90% of our kids would still be in public schools. That's a band-aid. That's not a solution. And so instead, we need to talk about taking what works, whether it's from charter schools or other models across the country, and integrating it into our public schools here. That's exactly what OPS and other districts are working on, and it's something we need to support.
I was thinking the other day, and there's a lot of stuff I left out in this speech, but one thing I did say is charter schools don't hurt kids in public schools and traditional schools. Nothing shows that they do. But what hurts is a family that has no good options. So I want the traditional schools to succeed. We support all kinds of policies targeting traditional schools so they can adopt the practices that are working in other traditional schools or charter schools or private schools. I would really like you to think about these questions for every policy, really. Does it help a child? And does it hurt any children? And if the answer is yes to the first question and no to the second question, then why the heck are we stopping it?
Next question. Success Academy has been sued for systematic discrimination against special needs students. This was in New York, January 21, 2016. How can special needs students be protected? under the charter system?
15% of kids in Success Academy qualify for special education. I want to go back to the fact their parents had a choice. They could have gone to the zone school or they could have gone to Success Academy. Every parent also has a choice to pull their kid out of school unless they're in the only school option they want. I am not familiar with that lawsuit, so I can't speak to that. But I can speak to the fact that, again, parents can choose. We are up against a lot if you're fighting for poor families and kids and going against all these entrenched interests I talked about, but not as an excuse. But I'll tell you what should be happening in Nebraska right now is there should be a lot of civil rights complaints about the educational opportunities we are giving kids based on their race and income and what educational opportunities they aren't being given. And going back to that grade freezing issue, that's a civil rights violation, telling kids to stay home from school. So there's all kinds of legal challenges that could be and should be happening. And in a lot of states that have more school choice, that's how they got there, is people started suing because they were being denied an equal quality education, and the courts often and the U.S. Department of Education agrees.
This is a really widespread problem in charter schools across the country. There's a tremendous amount of discrimination that occurs, as I mentioned, in the application process and in counseling students out of staying in charter schools if they don't fit a certain mold, and frankly, if they're going to be more expensive to educate. So I'm not an expert on that lawsuit, so I won't comment on that, but I will say that there was a different lawsuit in New Orleans where following Hurricane Katrina, the city essentially did away with its public school system. They now have only charter and voucher schools, private and parochial schools, for all intents and purposes. And in New Orleans, there was a lawsuit because there was no elected school board, and because charter schools individually choose which students they will serve, there was no entity making sure that students were in school at all. So when many students, in particular special ed students, got turned away from one charter school, there was nobody to make sure that they had another alternative to go to. They would get turned away from one charter school after another. Some students were out of school for as long as 4 years. That's how long it took this lawsuit to resolve. And what the lawsuit required the schools in New Orleans to do is to set up a system that looks an awful lot like a school board to track where students are and make sure that they're actually being educated. So instead of blowing up what works, I think we should make improvements where they need to be made, but take what's working about our schools and run with it.
Can I respond to that really quick? So I think I mentioned that I lived in New Orleans. I went to college there right up until Hurricane Katrina happened my senior year. And that really did inform my views on this issue very much. I worked in the schools. I volunteered. I would go tutor kids while I was in college. And I had two or three kids that I would go once or twice a week. And more than once, I'd show up. And in this case, he wouldn't be there anymore, and they couldn't tell me where he was. So this idea that kids are being failed by the system, it happens in all systems, unfortunately, but I can pledge to you right now, as hard as I fight to make school choice available to families, I and the people I'm sure that I work alongside would agree, will fight to prevent schools from operating that do these things. And we're talking a lot about laws, and you know, I went to law school, and that's how lawyers make money. They file lawsuits. So and I don't mean to be flip about that, but I don't want to get off the topic about empowering parents and focusing on what is the best option for every child based on their unique needs.
Okay. How do you explain higher graduation rates for students, especially African-American students, but students testing into remedial college courses, parentheses, math, reading, writing, still remain high?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a broad challenge across education, and it's one that charter and voucher schools as well as public schools face. You know, there are some disparities between what high schools are teaching and what in particular employers are looking for. And that's a broader question across education. I think the answer is that we need to, you know, focus on college readiness, and something that, you know, OPS is doing really well is with these aggressive school improvement plans that I mentioned. You know, they are raising standards. Katie mentioned high expectations and no excuses at one point. And those are a couple of buzzwords that we hear a lot in sort of school reform type conversation. And it's hard to know exactly what they mean. To me, high expectations mean that we believe every child has the potential to succeed, and we're going to invest in that child until they achieve success. And that's what we need to do. I mean, it's not an easy question with an easy answer. I can tell you that it's a challenge faced by both public and private and charter schools. But it's something that we're working on, and something OPS in particular has greatly improved over the last 10 years, as I mentioned. There's still more work to do. There's no question about that. And until every child is graduating from high school, we will have more work to do, and ready for college or career, we'll have more work to do. But discounting the fact that we're on the right path and making progress would be a huge mistake.
And I know we're running out of time, but I'm really glad this question came up. I think it's one of the most important points we can make here today, is that what has happened over the last 10 years, and this has certainly happened in OPS, and there are news articles about it, and you know, some things we do agree with the teachers union on is that we are passing kids along who haven't mastered the content. And I'm not going to say they support this law, but there is a bill down in the legislature this year that said if a child cannot read by the time they finish third grade, they shouldn't be promoted. They should be given intervention starting in kindergarten to make sure they meet that crucial mark and can read, because if you promote a child and they cannot read, they will not learn after fourth grade. And 85% of the juveniles in America that are in the criminal justice system are illiterate. We do not put fourth graders in jail. They got there in large part, that's 85% would suggest, because they never learned to read in school. And OPS in the last 10 years has stopped focusing on that as much, and they now promote kids regardless of whether or not they can read. So this idea that we're graduating more kids has to be considered with the fact how many kids are going to college and are not prepared to succeed. The high school diploma has been watered down for way too many kids, and we're setting them up for failure to take out student loans they won't be able to pay back, because remedial classes often aren't covered the same way, and they finish and they don't get credit for it. Much less likely to go on and get a degree. Again, it's 23% of kids going to Metro Community College finish in 3 years, in large part because they weren't prepared by their school.
Katie's referring to LB 651, which was introduced in the legislature this year. What it would do is require by state law that any child who doesn't read at grade level by the end of third grade be held back a year. There's little opportunity in this bill for input from the individual student's family, teachers, principal, or others surrounding them who know their actual situation. And there's a huge body of research to show that holding kids back in school is actually one of the most harmful things we can do in terms of their education. There's one study that looked at nearly 200 different interventions that we can try with students. This was actually a meta study, so it's a combination of many other pieces of research. And of the 193 or so different interventions that you know might be tried in schools, retention is one of only seven that actually set kids back further. What helps kids with reading or any other subject is literacy instruction. It's instruction in the subject matter, not grade retention. So OPS, LPS, Millard, Westside, most of, nearly all of the other districts in the state, and minus some of the really, really tiny ones with only a few students, do offer very focused literacy instruction, and that's what helps kids learn, not grade retention. So LB 651 is a really dangerous bill because it creates this misnomer that by holding kids back and repeating what apparently hadn't worked up to that point, we're somehow going to get a different outcome. And instead, what we need to do is focus on literacy instruction to make sure that, you know, the kids are reading at grade level. And by the way, nobody wants kids to learn how to read more than their teachers.
There's more than their parents. No one wants it more than their parents. And the law actually lets parents overcome holding them back. So the parent can say, no, I don't want to hold them back. And I heard from a parent while this was being debated that they actually wanted their child to be retained. And the school district said, no, it's against our policy. They're going on. It's best for them. They'll be embarrassed if you hold them back. It'll be fine. Look, our graduation rates are going up.
There is one other quick piece of information that I want to note. The NAEP is the National Assessment of Educational Progress. It is a standardized test that's existed since the 1960s, and it is the only test that allows us to compare through time and between states how students are doing. On average, comparing NAEP scores today versus where they were in the late 1960s, public school students are on average 2.5 grade levels ahead of where they were in the late 60s by eighth grade math. Our definition of what is eighth grade math has jumped ahead 2.5 grade levels in the last 50 years. That is some really significant progress that we're making nationally, and it's something that shouldn't be discounted. And so when we think about what students are doing in school and working to grade level, all of those things are important, but it's also really important that we continue that positive trend line that's been going on for the last 50 years in American education.
And this is what the NAEP looks like in Nebraska. So I'm glad you brought that up, because every state has to take it. So if you look at where 1992 is when we started to 2015 is the data I'm most familiar with, or 2013, look at the national average, and Anne is right. In 1992, we were down here as a country, and now we're up here. Great improvement. That's what we're all working towards. Nebraska is flat. Nebraska used to be one of the best states in the country on NAEP 20 years ago, and now we're average. Black students in Nebraska, according to the NAEP, perform worse than most black students in the rest of the country. So that's really what this comes down to. It's not really about tests. It's about parents and whether they should have other choices and be able to choose schools that do have that positive trend line.
Okay. I'd like to thank Katie Linehan and Ann Hunter-Pertle for taking time out of their schedule to answer the questions that we provided for them. And could we give them a hand?
You've been listening to a luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club on Noon Forum. We've heard a debate on the topic Education in Nebraska, School Choice, and the Charter School Debate. The guest speakers were Katie Linehan, Executive Director of Educate Nebraska, an organization which promotes private school choice to low-income families and opening the door to high-performing public charter schools, and Ann Hunter-Pertle, Executive Director of Stand for Schools, a Nebraska-based organization which advocates the ongoing tradition of public education. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, July 20th, 2017, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. The Omaha Press Club holds these noontime educational forums each month. The next program will be this Thursday, September 21st at 12 noon. At that time, the guest speaker will be Rachel Jacobson, Executive Director of Film Streams, Omaha's nonprofit cinema. She will talk about the progress of the renovation of Omaha's Dundee Theater. If you'd like to attend this or other future programs in the series, call the Omaha Press Club at 402-345-8008. These events are open to both members and non-members of the Omaha Press Club. The Omaha Press Club is located on the 22nd floor of the First National Center, 16th and Dodge in downtown Omaha. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of over 600 previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.